I'm Joe Bash, and I've been introducing myself here to you. I did have a career in the youth office. I guess that's where I got my interest in folk music for about 12 years, all through the 60s, the turbulent 60s. I went through all of that on a national scale with youth, and you might remember a few things about that era. And in the process of it, I got to writing folk songs, and that's how these folk songs began. And I wrote some in those early years, but I continued to write them. I haven't published since, maybe 15 years. But this whole crop of songs now that I'm playing here are songs that I'll put together in some sort of book, which I don't know who will publish or where, but if nobody will publish them, I'll publish them myself. I want them the way they are, though, and I don't want any editors messing around with them. And so that's going to be the question, I guess, as to how they all come out. I know Catherine Marshall, but I don't. Yeah, there are a number of publishing houses that have published some of my stuff. I have, in fact, a song in one of the hymns that we sang for Vespers. In the first evening is in the World Council's Cantata Domina hymnal. So, once in a while when I want to make myself feel good, why I tell myself something like that. So, but basically, a lot of the songs are for the time, and some of the songs that you hear today will be somewhat for the time, and they won't maybe sound right in 10 or 15 years. I don't worry about that, really. I think that the problem of hymnody and the problem of the songs of the church are that they frequently don't speak very much to the time. And I guess a writer feels like, I want to endure forever. And so he frequently writes something that is so general that you may miss what he's trying to say or what she's trying to say. And I just haven't done that. Where I think that the scriptures comment on something going on today, I usually try to bring the edge of that into what's happening. And it's my own opinion, if you want to understand that. I speak out of certain kinds of perspectives, and you'll find that comes through frequently. Today, I want to look at kings and prophets in collision, and frankly, it's just so much material that I'm going to try to sweep through it. And I'm going to be very frustrated because it's really 2 days, 3 days material, all congested into one. I want to give you pictures of the whole era of the kings in Israelite life. And I also want you to see that there are issues that run through. These will not be coordinated questions. I'm not trying to bring you to a conclusion today. I'm just wanting to open up some of the questions that are raised, because I don't think they're books alone about a past era, which they definitely were, but they're also books that relate into our own time as well. So the first question, remember yesterday I put you in twos, find yourself a partner, and if you're not sitting close to someone, move close to someone so that you can have a chance to dialogue someplace along the line. Just two together, because that way you all get a chance to think about these questions, and you don't leave it to me or one other person who asked the question. I'm also going to repeat the question that you give, because I guess as it's recorded, it needs repetition because your voices may not be heard. So the first question that I'd like you to deal with, and then I'm going to sing you a song. Listen to it very carefully. It opens up a big issue. I just want you to touch on it as you dialogue with each other. Now listen, do you think we could live regionally without a president and a centralized government? Just talk. I know you haven't thought about that a lot, but just talk about it for a little bit. The two and two for a couple minutes. What do you think? I hear a no. Yes. The question is, do you think we could live regionally without a president, without a centralized government here in the United States? See, what I'm intending to do is open up Pandora's box. This is a large question, and I know that you've just only begun it. What I'm saying is that there's a whole question that's residing in the book of Judges, which is an obscure book, that not many people have thought about, and that they maybe ought to think about. Now, this is not a usual folk song. I'm not quite sure where you can join in, but particularly where it gets into the third line, I think that you can kind of come in on it. The first couple lines, I'm not saying you can't come in on it, but I know that I sing it different every time, as my son tells me very frequently. And so it may be a little hard to get into the rhythm of it, but you're welcome to sing along wherever you can. This is the way it goes. Every man did what is right in his own eyes, and there was no king in the land. Every man under his tree beneath the blue sky, and there was no king in the land. Try that with me. See how that goes. Every man did what is right in his own eyes, and there was no king in the land. Every man under his tree beneath the blue skies, and there was no king in the land. Now listen. No one to say, I want your boy to march away in my employ. Everyone did what is right in his own eyes. Now that's where it goes. Okay, let's start it from the beginning. We'll sing it through twice, and then we'll sing the first couple lines as the finale. Every man did what is right in his own eyes, and there was no king in the land. Every man under his tree beneath the blue skies, and there was no king in the land. No one to say, I want your boy to march away in my employ. Everyone did what is right in his own eyes. Every man did what is right in his own eyes, and there was no king in the land. Every man under his tree beneath the blue skies, and there was no king in the land. And there was rage, and there was war, near genocide, maybe more. Everyone did what is right in his own eyes. Every man did what is right in his own eyes, and there was no king in the land. That was the time of the judges. And when they needed somebody, a judge arose. God raised up a judge, man or woman, Deborah or Gideon or Samson, and they were rescued. Now, it was a big debate, and I can't take the time today to talk about it, but it's worth a whole session sometime, between Samuel on the one hand, eventually, and Saul and the king kind of people on the other. Samuel, a prophet, and Saul the king on the other. And it never got resolved very well. There's a very interesting passage in the book of Samuel about what the kings will do. Kings will draft you. The kings will put you into all kinds of situations that you don't want to be, because they'll have the power. And there's a very famous scholar named Mendenhall at the University of Michigan. And I just was chatting with somebody last week who studied with him very closely for 3 months. And Mendenhall says we should go back to the time of the judges. And maybe that would get us out of some of the troubles that we have. I don't know. Well, anyway, good question. It raises the question, I suppose, at the very fundamental level of what is the national purpose? How are we going to try to accomplish what we accomplish? And really some neat stuff there. I want to ask you another question. And this is way off. I'm just going to shoot off in different angles today. What do you think about suicide? Okay, I'll again, I'm just wanting to touch on these issues. I'm just saying that there's a real live one here, and that this is not an easy question, and that it's less easily talked about today because the options are much more difficult than they may have been before the age of scientific technology and the whole question of medical, biomedical ethics, which raises the point of when is it a proper time to die? And, you know, and does a person have a choice of being hooked up to all those things? Or should that person make a decision, I want to die, which might be thought of as a form of suicide? So it's a good question. When I was a young man, and it was very clear to Christians that you should never commit suicide, it was God's life to give and to take. But it's a much more difficult question now, and not easy at all. There aren't very many illustrations of this in the Bible. In fact, very few. In the ancient world, there were a lot. When a man failed, frequently he committed suicide. Kings and generals, a whole lot of people like that often did that. Or when somebody was after them, they committed suicide before they got there, all that kind of thing. There were just a few. There's one here that comes right at the beginning, and we can see why, maybe. Old King Saul, he finally, after a failed battle when he was defeated, committed suicide. And I can't play this on my auto harp. I don't have the right chords for it. In fact, I've never used this before. And it's in an idiom that I'm not as comfortable in. It's kind of a jazz thing. And I need somebody that's really a swinging pianist, I guess, to move around with it. And I haven't had nerve enough to talk to Beanie about it yet, whether he would even think it's worth his time. But it goes like this. Old King Saul, he was a moody man, had to watch out for his javelin. Old King Saul, he was a moody, 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 moody man. Sing along with me. Old King Saul, he was a moody man, had to watch out for his javelin. Old King Saul, he was a moody, 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 moody man. Was he king or was he not? What was David's latest plot? I am the king, a moody, 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 moody man. Ghost at Endor told him straight, through the witch said, it's too late, you are a loser. Moody, 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 moody man. At Gilboa, feeling low, no place else on earth to go, toward a waiting. Moody, 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 moody man. Kind of something about King Saul. And you can see, I mean, several hundred years of tradition of no king. And here he was saying, I'm king. A couple other guys had tried that earlier. They'd failed. And so he didn't know whether he was a king or not. Does it remind you of any president that they used to make some a little teasing jokes about? I am the president. Remember the guy that they were talking about? Nixon in the 70s? Yeah. And maybe some of the same pretensions, we're not quite sure, whatever it was in his mind along the way. But this same kind of feeling, was he the king? And Samuel constantly kind of on the attack, criticizing him, and caught very moody about it, maybe even a little mentally unstable, throwing a javelin at David once while he was singing for him. And David was supposed to soothe his nerves and make him feel good with his songs, and you didn't know whether you were going to get a javelin thrown while you were playing for him. That was the moment. And yet, someplace there's kind of a tragedy about the person, and I can't quite feel, you know, condemnatory of Saul. He was caught between forces. Samuel anoints David to be king, and back and forth, all these things are flowing. Okay. That's another. Now, here's the great king, perhaps the greatest king of all. Well, the greatest king, there's no question about that. And I'll just sing a song about him. There's a lot more that could be sung about David. Again, he's a whole subject in itself. It's going to be hard for some of you to see this last line. Not always the melody. This is a very familiar melody. In fact, I think it's one of the most beautiful in all of folk literature, and I guess I wouldn't match it up with anything except something that I think has the same kinds of passion. It's a different kind of song, but I think that the melody and the themes, at least, are a good match. This is Shenandoah, so you know the melody. And it's a time, David had already become king, he'd become a great king, when suddenly the future that he had in mind, what he'd hoped for, went glimmering. Everything that he had dreamed of was over. And it may have something to say about the fate of the kingdom, finally. It goes like this, and I'm sure you can hum along at the beginning and add into it whenever you want to and join me. Oh, Absalom, I love thee dearly. Would God I died for thee. But cruel men in bitter vengeance killed him. They killed my son, hung upon a tree. Oh, Absalom, the best and fairest, buried now a rogue and rover. Yet once you were a prince in Israel and fit to be a king when my life was over. What, my friend, is in a father that would cause his dearest son in craft to seek his father's kingdom, to kill in cold red blood this old graybeard one? God, the Lord of earth and heaven, were such children ever thine, who sought to wrest from thee the kingdom, to found in ancient pride a rebellious line. God, when comes a different family, where two children honor thee, yet blood for blood to bring the bargain, a son of David's line hung upon. This is, to me anyway, one of the most touching moments in all of Israelite history. You can understand how it might have happened when Absalom heard, and undoubtedly did, of what his father had done to Uriah the Hittite to have Bathsheba for wife, and how the whole thing became cynical and corrupted. And there were things happening in Israel that were not good. And David began them for all of the fact that he was the greatest of the kings. And if you'll remember the diagrams I drew for you yesterday about how a city evolved in the ancient world and all of the class divisions that were there, well, this was happening in Jerusalem. And this is the story of the king. Well, it was. It got worse. It never got better. Okay, let's see how that works, and let's go to the next king. The only way you can treat this in a way
is with a some sort of sense of humor. Because if you want to get serious about it, it really makes you, you know, just kind of groan. And if it just ever got better, but it didn't.
Some of these songs, by the way, I wrote a while back. So, for instance, with Absalom and David, that's a song from a while back when I was still using D's and Dahls once in a while. And this is a song from a while back, too, from the late 60s. My name is King Solomon of Israel, I am, and I'm wise and I'm famous as your Uncle Sam, and the wealth of my country was fabled enough that I turned out successful, things never got tough. You know that melody? Sing along with me. My name is King Solomon of Israel, I am, and I'm wise and I'm famous as your Uncle Sam, and the wealth of my country was fabled enough that I turned out successful, things never got tough. Well, people came gawking from far and from near, and a queen came from Sheba, my wisdom to hear, and I lived like a monarch. But what gave me hives were the 1,000 treaties and 1,000 wives. But a king so successful must build him some houses and palaces with rooms for the hundreds of spouses, and then one great temple. But all of the mobs were a-messing around with the mighty strange god. My memorial was a temple with gold on the steeple. The only thing hurting in all this was the people, yet my glory was great till the day I was through, when I died the day after the land put in two. And then when this book tells you all of the heroes and all of the scoundrels as bad as old Nero, you'd think I'd make out with the biblical yield, but my glory was less than a flower of the field. You may remember who gave that judgment. Now Israel was great, King Solomon's day, and they say things are glorious in the USNA. Yet look out, friend, I'll tell you, when the truth gets unpeeled, someone else might be wearing the flower of the field. Now that's King Solomon. I don't know, how many of you thought of King Solomon in your growing up days as kind of a great, great king?
I did.
But in reflection, as I think about it, Solomon was really a cause of a lot of the troubles that split the kingdom. They split because Solomon didn't have any sense, for all the fact he was maybe the wisest of men, about how to run his kingdom, because he decided to run it like an Oriental monarch. And you can see it happening. There's narration there in the Kings and the Chronicles about what he did. He had slaves, and after a while his projects got so big that the foreign slaves that he was bringing in to do it couldn't do the job, so he began to draft his own people to do his projects. And eventually the burden was very great. And when Solomon died, they came to him, the wise men of the kingdom, and they said, now look, Solomon was too much. For all of his grandeur, relax. Rehoboam, that's the son of Solomon. And Rehoboam said, no, I'm going to do more than my father. And I'm going to double the burden. Well, it didn't work. And Jeroboam, who had gone into exile, who left because of Solomon, went down to Egypt, came back, and the 10 northern tribes split off from the 2 southern ones, and they never again came together. Now, that's another side of the story of Solomon. And I lay it to his charge. And this is, the high point of the monarchy. Now, this next song is really something that I'm kind of counting on a lot of gray-haired people to remember, as far as melodies are concerned. This is called the North and South Romp. This is what happened when the land split in two. And the first song is an old, it isn't a folk song, but it's kind of like that, feels like that. And I don't know, I hope you'll get into this because I'd like to do something with it. So learn these melodies if you can, because I think you do know them from your past someplace. My name is Jeroboam, I'm a foe of Solomon. I waited down in Egypt land until his reign was done. I gathered all the northern tribes and built us all a shrine. Proclaimed myself the king of the north and everything was fine. Oh, Jeroboam, this is the chance to be new. Oh, Jeroboam, will it be different with you? Kings, they followed after kings, each sin without fear. And Nineveh came and its good times and tribes, they disappeared. Do you remember that song? How many of you know Solomon Levi?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, sure. Okay, let's sing it one more time. My name is Jeroboam, I'm a foe of Solomon. I waited down in Egypt's land until his reign was done. I gathered all the northern tribes and built us all a shrine. Proclaimed myself the king of the north and everything was fine. Oh, Jeroboam, this is a chance to be new. Oh, Jeroboam, will it be different with you? Kings, they followed after kings, each sin without a fear. And Nineveh came in its good times and tribes, they disappeared. Now, okay. Now, there's another song. And see, if you look at the dates on this board, in 721, Nineveh came and destroyed the north. So when we're talking about that first song, it's from the time of the split when Solomon was, through Jeroboam, and you remember one of the mighty kings, not a good king, but a mighty king, Ahab. Jeroboam the second was when it was at its height. That's when Amos came. And Hoshea, scarcely even known, was the last king. 721, Nineveh destroyed it. Okay, now let's listen to another song. The kings of the south will learn from the north. The sons of the Lion of Judah, they'll follow and feed where David will lead, and live in Jerusalem in glory. Oh, say, can you see by dawn's early light? The armies of Judah are marching. Pride rules the land. The prophets are banned. The ending is much the same story. You remember the Spanish Cavalier? How many of you remember that? Okay. Let's go back through it one more time. The kings of the south will learn from the north. The sons of the Lion of Judah, they'll follow and feed where David will lead, and live in Jerusalem in glory. Oh, say, can you see by dawn's early light? The armies of Judah are marching. Pride rules the land. The prophets are banned. The ending is much the same story. Okay, two songs. They both come out the same. And in 587, 150 years later, Babylon did to Jerusalem what was done to Samaria by Nineveh about that 150 years before. In fact, there is now good evidence to think from the scholarship that's happening that some of the prophetic figures from Israel in the north, the northern kingdom, came down to the south, and they tried to change the directions, but they failed just as miserably as they failed in the north, because the prophets failed. They failed to do. Now, I don't know whether we can do this or not, and because I'm not sure you know these songs well enough, but how many of you remember that you could put Solomon Levi and the Spanish Cavalier together? Yeah. and they're supposed to happen at the same time, and all I'm trying to say in putting them together is that the North and the South came out somewhat the same as far as how the kings put things together. Now, I don't know, how many of you feel like you could sing with along on the Solomon Levi side? Not so many. I need some good strong voices there to keep that pulsing, keep that going. Who we got that can do that? Okay. The Edmonds, maybe. Do you know the Solomon Levi song? It's a little hard because they're different words, and I'm not trying to expect that you can. But if you can keep that pulse going, and then the Spanish Cavalier song on the other side. Pick your side, and let's see what happens. It may be a disaster, which it was anyway, so. Or would you rather do it beside? Let's try it one time. Everybody sing what he wants to sing, or she wants to sing. Okay. And then we'll try it where we'll split it. Let's see how it happens. Okay. My name of the South. Okay, let's see. My name. Okay, let's do it one more time. My name, just the North bunch. My name is Jeroboam. I'm a foe of Solomon. I waited down in Egypt land until his reign was done. I gathered all the northern tribes and built us all a shrine. Proclaimed myself the king of the north and everything was fine. Oh, Jeroboam, this is the chance to be new. Oh, Jeroboam, will it be different with you? Kings, they followed after kings, each sinned without a fear. And Nineveh came, and it's good time, 10 tribes, they disappear. Okay, now I'm going to count on you. And I'll go with the other ones, then. I'll go with the South bunch. Okay, let's go. The kings of the South will learn from the North. The sons of the Lion of Judah, they'll follow and feed where David will lead and live in Jerusalem in glory. Oh, say, can you see by dawn's early light the armies of Judah are marching? Pride rules the land, the prophets are banned. The ending is much the same story. Okay, I'll tell you, we don't have a concert performance. You get the idea. Got too much other things to do to go on. But I think you get the picture of what you can do with it, and that just needs rehearsal. It's not as if it can't be done. It sounds to me as if it can be. Okay, the next song is a repetition. And the Book of Kings was written in one era, the Book of Chronicles quite a bit later, and by Chronicles' time, they had a pretty exalted notion of what had happened to the kings. And so I picked up a little melody that all of you will kind of recognize, I think. This is kind of the way to express what Chronicles said. Once we were a powerful land, as is told in the Chronicles of Kings. Palaces and temples so grand, with a gold and ornament and ring. And we had a mighty empire, and all the mighty men of war. And it all came crashing down in the end, as the Book of Kings had said before. Sing it. Once we were a powerful land, as is told in the Chronicles of Kings. Palaces and temples so grand, with a gold and ornament and ring. And we had a mighty empire, and all the mighty men of war. And it all came crashing down in the end, as the Book of Kings had said before. Now, meanwhile, while all of this was happening, there were a whole lot of other people, not a majority by any means, a rather
small minority who were saying something else. These were the prophets. And I'll just sing you this one. I won't try to teach it to you because I got to move here a little bit. This is one fellow wrestling with the coming of the Babylonians now. Wrestling with it and saying, what can you do? Out there are the Chaldeans coming. The Chaldeans were the Babylonians. And so he was trying to deal with this. This is the prophet Habakkuk, or Habakkuk, I don't know which way to say it.
Earth is full of the glory of the Lord. Hallelujah. As the waters cover the sea. Hallelujah. The Chaldeans coming, the earth is a shaken. How shall the just one live? The just shall live by faith. Hallelujah. I stand on the watchtower. Oh God, I'm despairing. The warring world aflame. But the earth is full of the glory of the Lord. Hallelujah. As the waters cover the sea. Hallelujah.
It's where we get the doctrine of justification by faith. And Habakkuk is a very little known prophet. But he worked out that way. It wasn't as if it was a neat solution, because when you live by faith, you live with risk. And you live with the possibility of the destruction that he foresaw, but you live by faith. And that's the earliest interpretation of that phrase, justification by faith. Now, who were these prophets? And this is a song that I'm just trying to make up right now, and so new that I may mess up on it as I sing it for you. When you come to the New Testament, who is the prophet? Who is the prophet of the New Testament from the Old Testament times that's the important prophet? Who? Well, he was of the era. And I'm talking as they looked back when they talked about the prophets. Isaiah, John, not hearing it yet, I don't think. When Jesus went up on the Mount of Transfiguration, Elijah. Elijah was the big prophet. Never wrote a book, but he was the symbol, and you have to understand that in biblical times, they didn't always, they used symbols to gather together a whole bunch of people or a whole bunch of ideas. As I told you yesterday, Babylon gathered together a whole bunch of ideas. So this man, Elijah, gathered together the whole prophetic tradition. So they were talking about Elijah. They were talking about all the prophets. And Elijah was going to come before the Messiah. And that was the big thing that was happening in the New Testament time. They were talking about when that would happen, or who was Elijah. Was John the Baptist Elijah? That's why the question was so important. Okay, let's see whether I can get through this song. As you can tell, I'm an amateur trying to get melodies straight and get my chords in with them all right.
Elijah.
First among prophets, the king could not have you for hire.
Elijah,
no one could top it. You rode out on a chariot of fire. Naboth is haunting you. Ahab is hunting you. Baal prophets hounding you. Doubts are pounding you. Troubler of Israel, look out for Jezebel. Make clear the Lord's demand. Each one must understand. Flee to the country, no friend of God's left in the land. Elijah,
First among prophets, the king could not have you for hire. Now that's Elijah. And he set the stage for all the prophets to come. And others got the words down of what they said. And there's some record of what Elijah said, but he never wrote a book. But he was, in a way, first among prophets. Not the first one, by the way. I've written down, David had Nathan. There was Samuel before. So it isn't as if this is the first time. But that's kind of it. Now, in the North Kingdom, and we're going back a little bit in history now, there was a very, very excellent and able prophet, and in many ways set the pace for everything that went on later, and that's the prophet Amos. And this is, it isn't, I'm really kind of setting this up a little bit. One fellow thinks that Amos just came in, gave a sermon, and was thrown out. So it's the one-night stand of Amos. Isn't probably quite that way, but it's a cinch that he didn't come out too well and didn't stay too long because they wouldn't have him. The land was not able to bear him. And this is a familiar Irish tune. I don't know if there are any Irish around. Not in a Lutheran community. Not too many of them. But it's a good Irish folk song. Fill me uri uri. Okay. When Amos came, he told the news how Israel's actions did confuse, like selling folks for a pair of shoes, all of it done in the Lord's name. Fellemi uri uri a, fellemi uri uri a. I wonder what the king will say and what he'll do in the Lord's name. Okay, you can sing that with me. Second verse. For three transgressions and for four, the crowd was stomping now for more, when judgment stood at Israel's door, and oh, what Amos said in the Lord's name. Now, there's a whole section there. I'm trying to sum up in one little verse. He kept saying, for three transgressions and for four, Nineveh will be destroyed, Babylon will be destroyed, Egypt will be destroyed, and each time, you know, everybody, yay, yay, you know, it's really great. And then he said, Judah will be destroyed. Well, that's the southern kingdom, and after all, they deserved it. You know how you feel about your brothers and sisters once in a while. So they were clapping each time, and then he says, for three transgressions and for four, he'll be destroyed. That wasn't so much fun. They didn't like that. Okay, next verse. I hate the noise of your solemn assembly. Wonder about your acting humbly. Faith and all, it's mumbo-jumbly. All of it done in the Lord's name. Fellemi uri uri a, fellemi uri uri a. I wonder what the king will say and what he'll do in the Lord's name. Okay, here's what happened. The priest of Bethel, he said, go. The king confirmed the priest, you know. And Amos left without a show. All of it done in the Lord's name. Fellemi uri uri a, fellemi uri uri a. And that is what the king did say and what he did in the Lord's name. One way of talking about the message of Amos. Came, spoke with great power, and it was over. But he said it. He said that the day of the Lord, which was really from Babel days, or Babel thinking of the people of Israel, which was always the moment when the Lord came in and triumphed for Israel, that day of the Lord is darkness, he says, not light. And there was another prophet, though, that came at it slightly differently. And this is Hosea. This is a familiar tune, too. A traditional black song about the house of the rising sun. And I'd like to set all these things up a lot more, but Hosea had a wife who either was a prostitute, period, or was a temple prostitute of a pagan religion that was rampant in the northern kingdom. One way or another, he married this woman, Gomer. She left him for a while, and he reclaimed her again. And when he did, he felt so deeply about this as a prophet. He understood it to be a way of how God was in relationships to the covenantal Israel, and how they had betrayed in the same way and left. And so that's what this song is about and what Hosea is about. There is a place in a sultry land, the house of the rising sun. It's been the ruin of There is a place in a sultry land, the house of the rising sun. It's been the ruin of many a poor maid, and Gomer Lord was one. Oh, pound the pavements, cry her name, and bring her home once again. Hosea waits at the strangely locked door, and she will answer if she can. A man or a woman, whichever, Lord, the time's unfaithful as hell. A country sells and we all are sold. Well, who can ring a cracking bell? Oh, God in heaven, love this land at the place of the rising sun. Oh, buy her back from a low harlot's house, or else we all be undone. Now, I'm not sure who I'm singing about, whether I'm singing about Israel or our own time. And I guess for me, for all of the fact that you have to put the prophets back where they were, they have sounds like sounds of our own time. And Hosea sounds that way to me, and so does Amos. We're selling folks for a pair of shoes. I think there's any doubt about it. All kinds of people being sold in the marketplace in America. Amos said, as you've sold people for a pair of shoes, you'll be sold. And they were. Nineveh shipped them out. We don't know anything about the 10 tribes. Replaced them all with their own, with some other kinds of ethnic peoples. Just utterly destroyed the north. They were sold for a pair of shoes. And someplace, the prophets say a rough word. It's really a rough word about that. And someplace, it seems to me, there are prophets in our own day. And I don't think we want to see prophets as just a phenomenon of the past. Let's just talk for a couple minutes about who prophets might be today in your pairs or in your triplets. Who do you think are some of the prophets? I don't think he is, but some people might. Okay, let's just hear some of your candidates in a hurry. Billy Graham is one that's being talked about. Somebody said Pat Robertson. I guess this is the problem they had in Israel's day of sorting out who the prophets are, and we'll hear probably two sides of things back there. Solzhenitsyn, okay. Some others. Gandhi. Who? Yoder. Yeah. Yoder, you should hear him, by the way. Go over, I'm sure he's in the library. I know he's been very influential in John Schramm's life, he's a powerful person, a Mennonite. You've got to get acquainted with him. Politics of Jesus. Pardon? Yoder. I didn't mention, somebody else did. Y-O-D-E-R. Yeah. Who else? I'm surprised I haven't heard a couple. I thought I surely would. Dan Berrigan. Okay, now we're getting another kind of complexion. Who? Oh, yeah. Anybody else? Stringfellow? Martin Luther King. I think, personally, Martin Luther King is the greatest American we've produced. Jerry Falwell by some. As I say, I don't think he is, personally, but I think he's a false prophet. And I'll just say that when you get to the question of the prophets, you have to begin to sort them out. How do you test them out? For Israel, this was a tremendous problem. They never really resolved it. And finally, prophecy failed. It did not accomplish what it set out to do. A lot of people think that the prophets came in order for people to find out how they spoke the truth. And so the game with the prophets is to prove how they were right sometime later, how their prophecy was fulfilled. That's not why the prophets came. They came to change people's minds. That's why they came. And I don't think, finally, the game is whether to find out whether they were right or wrong, but to feel into what they were saying. Change your ways. For God's sake, change your ways. It's got to be. That was their concern. There's a really neat story about a fellow in Italy, a priest, who said the world is coming to an end. And he was kind of a neat guy. And everybody kind of got a little uptight in Italy. I don't think I remember even hearing about it over here. We weren't as concerned. We had the bomb, after all, and we weren't going to release it right at that time. So he said the world's going to come to an end. And the day came, like many other days like that, nothing happened. So they had a press conference with this guy. Can you imagine what it would be like? So all these reporters are sitting out there, and the first thing he said was, "Aren't you glad?" And yeah. And the prophets were concerned about changing people's minds. I think that, you know, that there were moments when they probably were glad if it changed people's minds, and there were momentary repentances and momentary changes that happened. The prophets were concerned to change the direction, not just to be right about something they said. That's a big thing to get in the center of what it was about. And there were big, big kinds of questions about this day of the Lord. Amos had come and said, "The day of the Lord is darkness, not light." That's the way it is. Another one came later, and he really, I've got him in the wrong place. Joel is really a prophet after the destruction of Jerusalem, but he sums up for me the argument, and you'll recognize the passage that is very important in Christian thinking. It marks one of the great holidays of the church. "Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions." This is about the day of the Lord. "The daughters of the land shall be heard. The sun it may darken, and the moon turn to blood. But listen for the singing of a bird. For your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. And sons and daughters, slaves shall all be heard." Now this is what was happening in his time. "Locusts came in fearful clouds of darkness. Little from those flying troops remain. Vines are dried, the fig trees white and barkless. Is this as the day of wrath, and are we doomed in terror's path? And will the future be a racking pain? Your old men shall dream dreams," try it with me, "and your young men shall see visions. The daughters of the land shall be heard. The sun it may darken, and the moon turn to blood. But listen for the singing of a bird. For your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. And sons and daughters, slaves, shall all be heard. Multitudes, the multitudes are standing. Stand in places where a choice is made, salted in a steering time demanding. Hunger, hate, and holocaust, and wishing for a Pentecost, but overwhelmed, uncertain, and dismayed. Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. The daughters of the land shall be heard. The sun it may darken, and the moon turn to blood. But listen for the
singing of a bird. For your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions, and sons and daughters, slaves shall all be heard.
It's Pentecost, and that's what we believe happened at Pentecost, an explosion of old men dreaming dreams. Old men, I got gray hairs, do you dream dreams? And young men seeing visions, a new time, in spite of all this other side of darkness, of the moon turning to blood and all that. Now let me just sing one more song with you, because I personally, my favorite prophet is the prophet Jeremiah. And I like him because someplace he's a little different from Amos, a little different from Isaiah, a little different from quite a few of them. I didn't sing you the song of Zephaniah, but that's the grimmest of all. That's the Dies Irae, the day of wrath. And if you want to feel some chills, why, read the book. But Jeremiah and Hosea, they really have a link together. Both of them not only told the message, but they felt it. They felt what was happening, and it was a grievous thing. They were, you know, it got into them, and it was deep sadness. And there's a lot that could be said about Jeremiah. Again, the time's up, but someplace or another, let me just sing you this song. And it says for me what a prophet was, how he collided with a king, and how really finally his voice was not heard, and how maybe we've got to think about the Ralph Naders and even Jane Fonda's among the prophets. That's my side of it, I guess. Maybe there's some other people think differently. Stringfellow, Berrigan, and Martin Luther King. Jeremiah, tell the people danger is at hand. Jeremiah, tell the king he will understand. Egypt and its promises, all of it a lie. Tell it, Jeremiah, that Jerusalem will die. Tell the people, say for God's sake, change your ways. Tell the people, say for God's sake, change your ways. Tell them that their temple provides no guarantees. Even though it glitters, that isn't what God sees. Tell them, Jeremiah, for their sake don't despair. Cry and cry your message, forget their haughty stares. Tell the people, say for God's sake, change your ways. Tell the people, say for God's sake, change your ways. Jeremiah, tell them of corruption in the streets. Tell them how it touches on everyone it meets. Tell them all of bondage, of slaveries without fail. Speak, O prophet, even if you have to go to jail. Tell the people, say for God's sake, change your ways. Tell the people, say for God's sake, change your ways. Jeremiah, and no one listening, no room there. The good thing about Jeremiah was that he didn't leave the people even when Jerusalem was destroyed. He didn't go to Babylon. He could have been a hero in Babylon because Babylon was looking for the guy that in Judah would say we should have been on Babylon's side all the time. He didn't go there. He stayed with the people in that destroyed area, in that destroyed city. And you'd think now they'll turn to Jeremiah. But another tragedy happened. The governor that the Babylonians had appointed was assassinated, and there was a great amount of wondering what to do, and the leaders said, let's go to Egypt, we'll flee because the Babylonians will come. Jeremiah said, don't go, don't go. And they took him along to Egypt. They would not hear him even then. And I can just hear him all the way down to Egypt saying, "Don't, come on, let's go back." That's the last we hear of Jeremiah. Well, to me, those are songs for the 70s.